know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And, you know, I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag.
Down again is Jawan Johnson, 3 for 3 from the field.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Purdue Basketball Beat. How are you doing, guys?
I never thought we'd make it past one.
Yeah, two's pretty good. Two in a row.
If it goes well, we might just hang it up.
It's a top two show. We are guaranteeing a top two show of season two tonight.
Yes. That's not nothing.
It's something. It's definitely something.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about what we saw in the exhibition game, specifically from some of the players, and how that sort of sets our expectations for the rest of the season, because we can extrapolate out from one exhibition game against a Division II opponent for the remaining 32 games. But first, we should talk about something that I know everyone that comes to this podcast wants to hear about, and that is IU basketball. Yeah. Big week for the Hoosiers.
I was wondering, is it taking you so long to get to IU? I was like, is he really going to talk about it, or is he going to bury it?
No, of course, we couldn't let an episode go without talking about Tom Crean and his struggles recently.
Yeah, I mean, I assume people know, but for those of you who don't, I guess earlier last week, I believe one IU player, a freshman, who I forgot the name of, Emmett Holt, I'm sorry, was drinking and ran over a apparently other, like also drunk Devin Davis, who's a sophomore on IU's team. Which is great. That's fine. That's a good thing to have to deal with as, you know, a human being, let alone a basketball team. And then two more Hoosiers, I think it was. Who are the other two that were suspended? Because two more were suspended.
Yeah, Stanley Robinson.
Stanford Robinson.
Or Stanford Robinson.
And Troy Williams were both suspended for drugs, which is great because I think 6 months ago – they had another suspension. Mm-hmm. And
the drug test, actually, that means that it's their second failed drug test, because the first one's handled internally, like the first occurrences, for the most part. So the second one, actually, it goes public where you get suspended it seems like it's the first time, but it is actually the second. Yeah, interesting fact.
Fun facts.
So it's been quite a week. Now, first of all, let's all hope that Devin Davis makes a full and speedy recovery, because that's a terrible thing to wind up in, regardless of how he got there, to wind up in the hospital after being hit by a car and suffering a severe head injury. So
it seems like from everything Crean was talking about and Fred Glass, the AD, were talking about, seems like he's going to make a full recovery, but, you know, it's still...
But it really shines a spotlight on the state of that program. So I don't know how that affects Purdue more than maybe making it easier for the Boilers to get a couple wins. But from a recruiting standpoint, I don't really see anything.
I was going to say, from recruiting, the only advantage I see, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I think from some of the really younger recruits, almost like what class of 2017 and younger, because most of the old, I don't think we're really competing with IU and the next up couple classes.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I don't know. Do you guys think, having 6 out of their 13 players in the last year be involved in some sort of drug or alcohol thing, that's bad, obviously. I mean, that's very bad, but it kind of pales in comparison to what's going on at UNC, at Florida State, you know, at some of these other places. Do you think it would be as big of a deal if Tom Crean wasn't, or if he was having some success? I think a lot of it is because a lot of IU fans were kind of on the fence about him anyway. He wasn't having much success with a lot of these top 10 recruiting classes.
I think that's a decent point. I mean, winning sort of fixes everything. I think the bigger issue with IU is that, you know, they, the fan base and the administration takes a lot of pride in being a clean program, Kelvin Sampson aside, Tom Crean aside, but they, so when it, when you get a couple hits within a short period of time, like we're looking at, you know, Stanford Robinson has two, Yogi Ferrell, Hannah Perea, Troy Robinson, Devin Davis, Emmett Holt. I mean, there's been so much going on in the last 6 to 9 months that I think any program would feel a little bit of heat. But when you're losing on top of that, it makes it worse. I mean, in all honesty, I think what's going on at UNC and Florida State and some of the other schools is worse than what's happening in Bloomington.
You know, this is, yeah, this is just a perfect storm of I think there's a faction of IU fans that are already, you know, concerned with Tom Crean, and they're kind of a vocal, they're, you know, minority, but a vocal minority. And then this has just kind of given them more of a platform. And I think he's losing people kind of slowly.
So I think if they miss the NCAA tournament this year, once his contract rolls over to the next year, they'll probably, they might let him.
I think, yeah, I do. I agree. I think that this summer, I don't see a very successful IU season. I didn't see it before all this happened. And I think this only hurts. And I think that next summer IU is looking for a new basketball coach.
Well, enough about IU. Time to move on to Purdue stuff. And that is the sound of Purdue fans everywhere turning off our podcast. They
got their interest. Getting back to the message board.
And now I will be ripped on Twitter. So we have one exhibition game under our belt. And fair to say that outside of the first 3 minutes or so, things went pretty well.
I agree. I think it went as well as we hoped. You know, I think first time a lot of people got to see the new freshman class, and along with John Octius, but I felt like they lived up to their expectations.
I think so. I'm gonna sit back, and you guys let me. You guys can talk, but just let me know when it's Vince Edwards' time, and then I'll talk about Vince Edwards. But you guys go. No. You guys go. Go ahead.
No, say what.
Yeah,
say what,
let's just get it over with.
You, right? Did I tell you? I told you. I've been telling you since 2011, baby. I told you. Vince Edwards is the real deal. Vince Edwards, man.
Wow. So that's a lot. Okay. care to elaborate? I mean, I know you've already made a pretty eloquent point defending your point of view, but
so
share a little more.
There were two plays that were identical in either, like, one in each half, between AJ Hammons and Vince Edwards. AJ got the rebound and was immediately double teamed under the basket. Vince Edwards made a great cut. AJ saw him, passed out of the double team, and it was an easy layup. In the second half, it was the exact opposite. Vince Edwards got a rebound, like, double teamed immediately. For some reason, Hammond's man doubled off of him, and it was just a nice little handoff, and AJ slammed it home. I mean, like, the interplay with the rest of the team, especially with AJ Hammond's, is almost there immediately. And it seems like he doesn't bring some of the spacing issues that we saw last year. He can function very well out of the high post. And even though he might not be the best three-point shooter yet, I really do think he's creative enough with the ball. He's a great, he's got great court vision. And I think him being in the high post with either Isaac Haas or AJ Hammons down low, I mean, I think it'll be great.
I mean, he had a great game. I mean, not really stand out in one category or another, but did a lot across a bunch of different categories. 5 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. I mean, in 19 minutes.
Well, here, while we're talking about Vince, I do want to ask in each one question. If you were to compare him to any previous Boilermaker, in no context, just compare him to someone.
Robbie.
You know, and it's hard. I hear that, you know, I cringe every time I hear that comparison, because I'd hate to put any of those types of expectations on someone. But man, he's showing some things that I haven't seen, you know, from someone his size. you know, the versatility is really starting to look familiar.
I think Hummel was a better shooter as a freshman than Edwards is right now. And Hummel was also probably a better rebounder, although maybe not by much. But Edwards, as far as the court vision, the ability to pass, handling, you know, that's ball handling.
He probably has about 30 pounds on Hummel when he came in as a freshman as well.
Yeah, probably.
I think, I mean, but, yeah, I Vince is a perfect type, like smaller four, especially, I mean, like a perfect college four. And I mean, I think it's a great fit already. I'm so excited.
I think he'll do some good stuff. Just saying, it's always a little scary to compare a current NBA player to a freshman playing in his first game against California, Pennsylvania.
I was actually kind of just trying to put you on the spot like that.
But all the freshmen did really good things, and that was really encouraging to see.
Yeah, a freshman we didn't really talk about in episode one of the Purdue Basketball Beat that you might have heard last week. And if you didn't, you should go download it. We didn't talk about PJ Thompson that much, and I thought he had a great game. I mean, he had 4 steals that led to fast breaks. I think we scored on 3 of them. He defensively, he's showing that he can be a pest. And I think that was the area that I didn't see him being that great in. And maybe I was wrong. Maybe we also playing Cal Poly or Cal U Pennsylvania. But I mean, I thought it was a great game.
You know who is his? I felt like his defensive instinct, kind of the way he plays. And I hate to throw this comparison out, but he kind of reminds me of Lewis Jackson, just the way he. He's, you know, outmanned. He's out, you know, probably loses. He's got, you know, loses but 3 inches against who he's guarding against, but he holds his ground.
I don't even think he's as athletic either. He just knows how to play. But like his basketball IQ is so good.
I think Lewis Jackson was an incredible athlete and probably 3 inches shorter than PJ Tucker. But I think he surprised me with his defense as well. Just being a pest, getting in there. He had a really good game. 7 points, 5 assists, 4 steals, 2 turnovers. But I mean, that's really what you want from a guy like that in the role that he's going to have this year.
Yeah, probably a good transition to look, because, you know, I think we came in thinking he was going to have to play some meaningful minutes, but now it looks like John Octias is securing that the starting position.
Oh man, he's good, isn't he? He's had one or two practices. I don't even know when he enrolled, like a month ago.
Yeah, it was. He missed the first week and a half of practice, but he had a very solid game too. He hit 4 of his 5 free throws, 3 rebounds, 8 total points. Only 1 assist, but no turnovers in 18 minutes. I mean, that's pretty good for a guy who's still getting to know his teammates. So hard to complain about that.
And he showed an ability to get to the rim. Mm-hmm. And at 6'4", you know, it's not the same as seeing Ronnie Johnson or Brayson Scott kind of, running the lane to get cream. But he's, you know, big enough that he's got a much better chance of finishing.
He's long. Mm-hmm. His arms are so long that, I mean, he's able to snatch those rebounds and get the ball up around a defender. I mean, I was really impressed with how he played.
I wrote about this in the post game, but there was a stretch, like I think a 5-minute stretch in the second half, in the middle of the second half, when the Vulcans scored something like 20, went on like a 20-5 run, but it didn't really matter. We were up 40. But Octias like kind of settled everyone down, drove to the hoop, got fouled, and settled everyone down in one of those huddles near the free throw line. I mean, he already looks comfortable in a leadership role. He's been in a new place, I think, once before, transferring once before. Super valuable addition, I think.
The only nit to pick there was he did have 4 fouls. And Dakota Mathias had 4 fouls too.
Yeah, that's just getting used to, faster play. I think John Octia, for on Dakota Mathias, just getting used to playing at the next level. Octia might have been a little too aggressive. I think a lot of times I remember they were going after the home run plays, the PJ Thompson plays, if you will. But I think that'll be with a little discipline. I think that'll be fixed. I'm not too worried about that.
Who else stood out to you guys? One of the
one of the things I wanted to talk about that's been talked about ad nauseum ever since Painter kind of dropped the hints, but the Twin Towers look with Hospital. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, were they playing together at the same time in the exhibition? I don't remember seeing that.
I think they did for like a minute, but I don't think it was that much. I think their tallest player, Cal Penn's tallest player was 6'6". Yeah, and both of them are dominating. Anyway, I do think they got a stretch for like maybe a couple minutes together, but it wasn't any long stretch of time.
Yeah, I wonder how realistic that really is. Just because I see value, especially if Vince Edwards is able to compete at the four. I just don't see the need to move to that necessarily.
I think I'd like to see it. Because we saw AJ step out a couple times, and I know a lot of people don't like this. I love it. I saw AJ step out and take a couple threes, and he looked smooth. His shot looked very comfortable. He looked like a shooter that wasn't hitting some shots. Like he looked very comfortable in that role. I think that if he can space out offensively, and hit enough of his hit those kind of jumpers, having both of those players on defense is enough to, just shut down some players in the Big Ten or some teams in the Big Ten. And I think that's one of our advantages,
Yeah, well, for that to work, Haas really has to stay out of foul trouble.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest thing you lose is having both at the same time, you kind of lose a bit of depth.
It's really going to be matchup dependent, I think.
Yep.
Seeing Hammond shoot, he looked pretty good, although I did get some flashbacks to Chalishan back in the day.
Yes.
But,
we called him the Bosnian Barricade, or the Iron Curtain, I think was another nickname we gave him.
Yeah. Well, but Hammond's guarding the four will be interesting because against some matchups, I think that could work, but against others, I'm not really sure. Like, if you've got a smaller, more athletic four who can really pull him out of the paint, I don't know if that's really a good matchup.
That's what zone defense is for, baby.
The zone looked uneven, I thought.
Yeah, so there, I think the first, in the first half when all of the starters were out, I think that was the first time we saw Purdue play zone in I don't know how many years. But in the, and it worked okay. It was fine. And they were just passing around the perimeter. Like they couldn't get it in because, they're not as good at basketball as a Big Ten team. But when the starters did it to start the second half, it was very rocky, like just to say the least.
I still maintain that the biggest benefit to Purdue going zone is the fact that they now practice against a zone. I don't know. I think that there's enough one-on-one defensive prowess on the team that going man-to-man will probably be fine in most cases. And it might only be certain lineups, like if Mathias and Stevens are on the court at the same time, where you think about using a zone, if only to cover some of the weaknesses of each of those players defensively.
Mm-hmm. I think kind of sticking with that, Isaac Haas, this was the first time we really saw him play. And I mean, he looks not afraid to use his body. Now, it's against a 6'6 guy, I know, but there were times when AJ Hammonds, his freshman year, had maybe half a foot on his defender, and he wouldn't just body the other guy into submission. I don't think Isaac Haas is afraid to use his body.
No, know what? And guys that size, their footwork needs a lot of work early on, and that's what I was most impressed with is his control and good good footwork, which is, I'm pretty excited about him, and I'm trying to temper my expectations, yep. But he seems to be a steal.
So how do you guys see the rest of the non-conference season going? I mean, does this change how you view this team, or is it right where you would expect them to be?
In my opinion, no, it doesn't change anything. I mean,
it was just nice to see him.
It was not much different than a scrimmage. It was just nice to have to beat somebody else.
I mean, You know, the things that it did were highlight some of the players that seemed to have made a lot of progress over the summer, like Bryson Scott. At least early, he had some of his more Bryson Scotty moments. You know, later in the game, but early he made a couple passes that he would have absolutely not made last year. Like
especially in transition.
Yeah, when he just bowl his head down and get to the rim and just kind of either toss the ball away or, you know, whatever, miss the shot. Now he was dishing to Isaac Haas. He had a nice pass, I think, to Kendall Stevens. Like he's making plays and it's good. He's growing as into that point guard role.
And you know what? I just want to say one thing about Bryson Scott is I do notice that he seems to be kind of polarizing. I think the Purdue fans are very, you know, after last year with all the, you know, the driving floaters and the bad penetration, people are kind of worried about that. And I think that he's still a valuable thing. We need somebody who can penetrate the D, and especially in Big Ten season, I think that we need to embrace it a little bit.
I think one of the things that I really liked about the game too, and again, you know, I don't want to read too much into one game, but the shots were pretty well distributed. There wasn't one guy with, you know, 17, 18 shot attempts and then everyone else in the 5 and 6 range. Hammonds had the most field goal attempts with 9, but then, you know, there are a couple people with, you know, 7 and 6 and 5. So the offense was more balanced than I think we've seen in recent years.
And the shot selection was good too. I mean, you know, those are things that aren't necessarily dictated by the defense, unless it's an elite defense that can dictate shot selection. But I think it's more indicative of some offensive changes that have happened in the offseason. That's good. I mean, that's very good.
You know, just the ball movement, every possession, it was clearly that they were able to navigate the offense and move the ball around, which is such a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's willing. Willing passing is, you know, is half the battle. Like being willing to look at your teammates, see who's open, see if there's a better shot, you know, see if there's a pass to the pass you can make. You know what I mean? It's just like not, yeah. Oh my, I was looking through some highlights when I was putting together some video, and like there were some times when we would just dribble the ball slowly across half court, and whoever it wasn't just RJ. There were a lot of people who did this,
right.
Just waited like 3 beats and took a 3. Like there was nothing. There was nobody was moving. Everybody was just kind of ball watching, and Ronnie or whoever the ball handler, Bryson or whoever the ball handler was, would just launch a 3. This was definitely a breath of fresh air.
I wish basketball would keep track of, you know, hockey assists, right? Assist before the assist, because, you know, I think last year we did see a lot of that. We saw a lot of one pass and then whoever got the pass did their best to get a shot off. And, you know, last Sunday we saw more passing that produced something. You know, this wasn't just throwing the ball around the arc. You know, they were trying to penetrate the defense. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, you know, this is still a exhibition game, but we saw, I think, what we needed to see from this team.
Yeah, I agree. And can we just for a second address that AJ Hammonds play, like that entire sequence?
that was really, for those who didn't see that, there was a play.
There's a video of it on the website
late in the game. Yeah. And so he blocks one shot, blocks the second shot. California gets a shot off barely. He barely misses getting that blocked too. I think it was Bryson Scott got the ball and pushed it forward. AJ was the trailer, and Scott did a nice he hit the defense hard, which is exactly what you're supposed to do, and then did a shovel pass back to Hammonds, who threw it down with a one-handed dunk, and it was the emotion that came out of that scene was ridiculous. I mean, everyone was going nuts. Hammonds, who, you know, was pretty stoic, was screaming and flexing, and it was really refreshing.
Yeah, there's more emotion in that shot than I think the last 2 years combined for him.
Man, what bugged me, like, so I wanted to do this in the post, but I thought I wouldn't harp on it. There's a video that I put up on the same channel earlier of last year when Hammonds and Stevens ran a side pick and roll against, like, an NBA style side pick and roll for a lob against Michigan. And Hammonds, you know, Nick Stauskas switched off of Kendall Stevens, and all of a sudden AJ was dunking on Nick Stauskas, and it was the play of the season last year.
I remember
it was unbelievable. It was a perfectly executed NBA style lob side pick and roll, and nobody went crazy. Like, nobody celebrated, nobody, like, fake pushed him. Like, you know, there were no chest bumps, no high fives, no nothing. And it was like, that was the most exciting play against a team, and the score was pretty close. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, like, this, it really does seem like a brand new team.
Well, because it mostly is.
No, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt.
I think one of the, if nothing else comes out of the season, maybe getting the basketball culture back to where it was before, to making the team enjoyable to watch again. I think we saw that with football, like, last year. It was just not even fun. And this year, even though they're losing, it's still kind of entertaining to watch, like, a real football team play. And I'm sort of hoping for that same development this year, too. You know, I want to, even if, I don't know, there's a debate on Twitter tonight about how many wins is this team going to get to. And even if we don't get to 20, if we're competitive and the team seems like together and it seems like things are headed in the right direction, then there's not complete satisfaction, but at least some satisfaction.
And you know, in that conversation, that was my whole point. Yeah, it's when you take a number, when your prediction, you know, 18, 19 wins out of context, I mean, there's so much variation between having 18 or 19 wins. And I think as a Purdue fan, I think we'd just be happy if they're working hard. You know, if it looks like they're putting out a sincere effort, then I think just that alone will make us feel a little bit better about the team.
Mm-hmm. Well, and probably will lead to more wins, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It'll be a challenging non-conference season.
It's not the easiest non-conference, and then we get into the conference, and then it becomes we're playing the best competition in the country. And I don't think it's too controversial of a statement to say that the Big Ten is the deepest conference in the country. It might not be as top heavy as the ACC, but it's I mean, what we were last, Purdue was last in the Big Ten last year, and we had 5 wins. I don't think that's happened in 25 years.
Well, and the conference season starts out Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and that's not really a fun first 3 games. Minnesota's improved. Michigan, you know, lost some players but got some too. And Wisconsin looks like a Final Four team. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a challenge. I think the team already looks like it's better than last year, but I'm not sure that guarantees – that doesn't necessarily guarantee 20 wins in an NCAA.
So tell me this. How would you compare the expectations for this year as compared to, I guess, the expectations of the first year of the baby, so like the 2007-2008 season?
Oh, I think the expectations on this team is actually a lot higher. I don't, because I remember it, and the baby bowler class wasn't supposed to be, you know, this world destroying class. They were just, you know, they were 4 good guys that happened to be all 4-star players, all from Indiana. Like, and that's cool. That's a cool story. And then they turned into this machine.
There was definitely excitement. There was definitely excitement about them. But there, it was also a future. Like, they're going to develop, play together, and you know, 3 years, they're going to, you know, be a great team.
Nobody thought they would make ESPN, the front of ESPN, like the main page of ESPN, and the baby boilers, like, you know, moniker would be on there. Like, you know, that was so far beyond any of our expectations.
I do remember
that. I think maybe that might be true to a certain extent. But at the same time, those 4 players were all top 75 players. Moore was a top 30 player. Juwan Johnson was a top 50 player. The class was ranked in the top five in its class. I think Purdue fans didn't really have the context to set proper expectations for that class because it was really unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And now when we come to, you know, the 2012 class and now the 2014 class, the 2007 class, the baby boiler class, really set the context for what a good set of freshmen can do. And so that, I think, is what raises the expectations for 2014 over the baby boiler class.
That was beautiful.
I do remember the specific point in that season where it was kind of that feeling. It's like, you know, we've been, the whole attitude was like, they're going to be good. You know, it's almost like the first year was kind of a playing off with found money. And, but then it was that point, I was like, well, why don't we, you know, you get that point where like, wow, we could make a run this year. And, and that was kind of a cool turning point where they realized that, you know, from the beginning, they could make some noise in the playoffs.
Or in the Didn't they tournament. Win like 11 games in a row or something?
Yeah, after conference? That, after the Wofford loss, the infamous Wofford loss.
Oh my God. Can we not talk about the Wofford? They're allowed to bring that up.
But they were still, I mean, they made it pretty clear that they were a tournament team. And I actually saw them in the tournament play against Baylor and then get beat by Xavier mm-hmm. in the second round. Mm-hmm. But it was still this team, like next year. I remember during, I think it was the Baylor game, Juwan Johnson, yeah. who played but wasn't really like, I mean, it was really Moore and Hummel that were the faces of that class. Gets the ball, you know, takes one step inside the free throw lane and just throws down like a crazy dunk. And I remember thinking like, wow, this team is going to be really fun next year.
I remember that. That was out in Washington, wasn't it?
It was in DC. Yeah, I took the day off of work to hang out at the Verizon Center for a day.
Nice. That's awesome. So I mean bringing it back to this year, I think people like Vince Edwards and Isaac Haas do spark some of that excitement, but it's all, you know, how far have we come? It all comes back to AJ, right? I mean, it's AJ and Stevens to an extent are the two players that'll push us.
So we've got only a couple minutes left, but we do have the final exhibition game tomorrow, Friday, against Carroll. Which I know absolutely nothing about.
That was Travis
Tacos.
We're playing a team full of Travis Carrolls.
I think
our worst nightmare.
Coached by Carson Cunningham, by the way.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why we're playing him.
Former Purdue guard Carson Cunningham. Yeah, so that should be another. Easy win, hopefully.
Really quick, I'm excited to see somebody I was completely wrong about, which was Jaquill Taylor. I didn't think, I thought he was a surefire redshirt candidate, and he played. I mean, he was good. He looked like he wasn't lost. And a lot of times, you know, when like early Ryan Smith or like early Anthony Johnson or some of these players that were redshirted, he didn't have that look on his face. He didn't have that look of being lost and not knowing where to be on defense. He was great.
He played 16 minutes. Looked pretty good.
You know, and if he develops, I mean, he's got a lot of athleticism. And if he could, you know, and he has a relatively soft shot. I mean, he doesn't seem like a bad shooter at all. But, I mean, if he could gain weight, he could be a pretty interesting, develop into a pretty interesting player.
Yeah,
it looks like his ankle, his injury, he's not 100% yet still. So we might have to give him a year or two mm-hmm. to see that, but I definitely agree.
He had that one. His defensive versatility makes me really excited. Like he had that one play by the Purdue baseline where he forced the turnover and the entire bench was going crazy. I remember. And I don't know. I mean, that was the point where I remember like, wow, I was completely wrong about this kid. Like he's, you know, he can play. So I don't know. I don't remember. Do you have, like, when you say 10 games into the season, he's a red shirt, like we're redshirting him. Can you not burn that red shirt?
You can burn the red shirt at any time.
Okay. I didn't.
You don't apply for a red shirt until after the season.
Okay. Okay. So I think he'll.
That's for a medical red shirt, by the way.
I think he's one of those players that Painter might think about, like, just giving some rest, but then, you know, break in case of emergency. Like if there's an injury, if there's a front court injury or something like that.
Well, that about does it for episode 2. Congratulations to everyone listening for still listening.
There's no one listening. Who are we kidding?
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Appreciate it.